This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is BFM 89.9, 19th of March, 7.05 in the morning. Wong Xiaoning, Philip C and myself, Ku Su Zhuang. I almost forgot my own name.
Wow. This is not the first time.
It's not the first time, won't be the last time. In about 15 minutes, we'll talk to a gentleman named Tan Zai Jin, the research manager at the Asia School of Business, on the Pemakasa stimulus package and how gig workers could benefit from that. But before that, markets.
Right. So in the US, I think the upward surge has snapped. Everything is now down. The Dow is closed down 0.5%, S&P 500 down 1.5%, and NASDAQ down 3%. Whereas in Asia, if you cross over to the Pacific, I think the upward gain for all the markets was taken cue from the day before. So Nikkei was up 1%, Shanghai up 0.5%, Hang Seng up 1.3%, Singapore up 0.9%, FBM KLCI green also at plus 0.2%.
So to get a handle on global markets, we talked to Carlos Casanova, the senior economist at UBP. Carlos, the Fed's dot plot indicates that rates will stay low till 2023. What impact will this have on the US dollar going forward?
Mm-hmm. So we saw some tweaks out of the FOMC meeting this week. We saw a revision in forecasts, which was more bullish. But despite this, we saw that most of the governors are not pricing in any changes to rates until 2023, 2022, potentially, depending on how the economic recovery takes shape. So in our opinion, if you look at financial conditions, these remain quite loose. So although the recovery is underway, the Fed is confident that this increase in interest rates, which of course determines the amount of money that has to be repaid every month by households with higher levels of debt after the pandemic. So the Fed is confident that this increase will not significantly impact the recovery, and so they are likely to stay in the sidelines for the time being. But of course, if there is anything that potentially derails the economic recovery, I mean, the sentiment right now is very bullish. We saw the Fed saying GDP was going to grow at 6.5% in 2021, right? But if there is anything that might potentially derail this recovery, only then would we see more proactive signaling from the Fed.
But Carlos, the market's trying to tell us something else, right? Because last night there was a spike in US Treasury yields driving the 10-year benchmark to 1.75% for the first time since January 2020. So how should we read into all this kind of mixed signals?
So actually, to some degree, that rise in UST 10-year yields was actually long overdue. Most asset classes remain very high compared to levels prior to the pandemic in 2019. So if you look at the performance on the equity front, for example, there's been a lot of upside pressure. Housing globally remains very bubbly. And yet the 10-year yield is still at levels lower than those prior to the pandemic. So in the context of this being a cyclical upswing, we do expect to see better growth this year. Anything due to the significant base effect from last year, right? So in this context, there should be some degree of yield curve steepening, which hasn't happened until recently. So we do expect that the yield might continue to climb. The current forecast is 1.7 to 2.5% before stabilizing around its natural rate, which should be 2% or slightly lower thereafter. So there is still some potential for this yield to go higher. And a lot of it is because, it is relatively less expensive compared to other asset classes.
Carlos, can I shift your attention to oil? Because the International Energy Agency says that the talk of an oil price super cycle is premature. And that's showing in the numbers today as Brent crude fell to $63, right? But Wall Street banks are still bullish. Where's your stand on this?
Well, there's renewed talks of a commodity super cycle. Potentially slightly premature. We have seen a shift in the supply-demand equilibrium with this pickup in recovery. And of course, a big part of that pickup in recovery is the fact that there's pent-up demand. I think in the US, excess savings are 10% of GDP or something outrageous like that. So when this is unleashed, there's going to be a lot of demand, which favors commodities, including oil. But the supply side restrictions are more real when you look at industrial commodities such as copper, where you know there were disruptions surrounding COVID-19 last year as people were not able to go into work and operate those copper mines. But also it's very difficult for them to increase that supply and you know invest in a new copper mine or in a new industrial metal mine in the short term. Whereas with oil, most of the restriction on the supply side hinges on that agreement by OPEC to restrict capacity. So the capacity is there, it's just being artificially kept low to make sure that there's appreciation on the pricing front. So potentially less sustainable of a recovery relative to other commodities, but we are going to see still some upside pressure on the back of that pent-up demand.
Yeah, Carlos, notwithstanding the historical issues that you raised earlier with yields on T-bills, those declines have come and coincided with obviously some declines on oil as well and the drop in U.S. equities. Inflation fears are what's of uppermost concern according to Wall Street. What's your point of view on inflation?
Mm-hmm. Well, inflation expectations were also adjusted this week. Our current view is, of course, that we will see an impact in on the inflation front. There is a very real base effect. So in the short term, there's going to be a sharp uptick in inflation because of the fact that inflation was negative during the summer last year. So that is going to lead to a spike in inflation. But, you know, because the recovery is still a little bit uneven, it's a little bit shaky, not all of the sectors of the economy are as strong, you know, with manufacturing definitely outperforming services in the US for the time being. We think that the Fed will look past this surge in inflation, and it's not likely to turn into a more structural long-term uptick in inflation. That really would have a significant impact on the nascent economic recovery in the US, but we think it's going to be mostly temporary with a shift towards slightly higher inflation around 2 to 2.5% thereafter. So that is our current stance on inflation.
So Carlos, let's shift the conversation to China and US because we know this weekend the officials are meeting in Alaska. Now, trade of course remains a point of contention between the two. So what do you think are the main trade issues that Biden and Xi Jinping will need to iron out later this year?
Mm-hmm. Well, to be honest, I don't think they'll iron out much in Alaska. I think it's going to be a slightly tense meeting. It's good that both sides agree to initiate a conversation. We did see in the Biden administration trying to shift the discussion towards geopolitics. So they announced a number of sanctions on Hong Kong officials. They also made sure that they reached out to key allies in the region like Japan before meeting with China. So that doesn't set the stage for a very constructive conversation around trade. Of course, the Biden administration has been focusing more on human rights issues. So we do expect that maybe, you know, exports of tomatoes and other products from Xinjiang might feature or might be targeted. But overall, they are willing to move away from the trade war narrative and towards more of a containment approach, focusing on key sectors. So it's unlikely that, I mean, China would very much want those tariffs to be removed. It's unlikely that President Biden will have the space to do that, given that there's bipartisan support in Congress to have a stronger stance on China. So we will not see that this week at all. But it is possible that over the coming months or year, there's going to be just less emphasis on those tariffs and more emphasis on export controls of technology and imposing sanctions on specific individuals and companies. So that is where things are heading. And we will see some of that rhetoric taking shape this week with the bilateral meeting.
All right, Carlos, thank you so much for your time. That was Carlos Casanova, the senior economist at UBP out of Hong Kong. Some much-needed perspective from Carlos earlier in terms of inflation is one thing, and how they're looking beyond inflation as being perhaps a bit of a short-term blip. And of course, US T-bills, as you say, they're spiked. According to the Bloomberg, 87% higher this year so far, year-to-date. Yes. That sounds incredible.
Past 1.7, I think.
Yeah, 1.75%.
As of today, 1.71. 1.71 actually. That's a huge gain for the year to date.
Yes.
I think Carlos' point is, don't be surprised if it goes beyond 2%, because this is one asset class which hasn't done very much, right?
Yep. So the yield is like at pre-COVID levels, 1.7, and the forecast is 2 to 2.2%.
Yeah. So again, some much needed perspective there.
Sorry, Shauna, you wanted to say something?
No, I'm just that markets seem to be at this kind of crosswinds, if you ask me, right? Because the volatility on the day-to-day basis is amazing when you see NASDAQ correct 3%, and then, you know, come Monday when NASDAQ reopens, actually tonight when NASDAQ trades our time, does it go back up again? You know, I think it's just indicative that just so much hot money in the system because interest rates are still so low, and investors just are locking in gains whenever they can, and then just cutting their positions when they see any panic on Wall Street. So I think volatility is going to be here for a while because the easy money was made last year.
I agree with you, because early this week it was really a super rally driven by the stimulus package, by Jerome Powell's decision on the Fed, and then I think you see the correction happening today, and so what's happening tomorrow will be very
key. It's going to be more sentiment driven more than anything else, because the data, it's up to you to interpret it, right? Whether it's a glass full, half glass full or half glass empty kind of situation.
Yeah, strange. And I think in the context of what you're saying, if you're a professional fund manager, maybe you do that. But if you're an individual personal investor with your own funds, it's quite another.
It is going to be extremely challenging.
Right. And if you lock in gains, that means you have to pay commission, you know, on the trades, right? And can you get the same price? Because if they just keep moving north, you've lost your advantage, you know, your cost advantage. Okay, FedEx have reported earnings. Let's do that quickly. Better than expected for the fiscal third quarter ending February 28th. And obviously, you know, FedEx is a delivery company which sends out stuff to the whole world.
Yeah, it earned $892 million, which is up 2.8 times on year. I think almost every courier company has done really well, right? Yeah. Whether it's DHL, whether it's FedEx, and even if we bring the conversation back to Malaysia's GDEX, all reporting super high volumes. Because let's face it, in COVID-19, everybody's sending stuff around the world. So I'm not surprised by these set of results. But the question, of course, is future growth. Can they continue to deliver these kind of numbers if there's vaccine optimism, if we go back to the shops, for example?
Well, from what they said they saw strong growth in domestic volume. So people in America are buying stuff from Amazon and all these other things.
Yeah, it's
an e-commerce move. E-commerce
move, yeah. But correct. Like I say, is there going to be pent-up demand for you to go back to the shops?
I think one king, though, is that they are affected by severe weather. So in February, that has also actually cut their operating income by roughly $315 million. Once their operating hub in Memphis was affected by that.
But a company reporting not such good results is Nike. Their results fell short of estimates, partially because there are ongoing store closures in Europe and there was port congestion in the US.
Yeah, so logistics issues. But from a quality perspective, I stopped buying Nike years ago because they're not the best made stuff in the world. But again, this is a personal viewpoint.
I think it's a function of distribution channel, because while you saw the performance being quite terrible, but the direct-to-consumer grew 20% and online sales surged 60%.
Okay, I just want to leave you with one sentence. Lamborghini sales went through the roof, talking about hot money. But if you want to read about that, go and look for it on the internet.
Were you one of those people adding to the hot, Lamborghini sales drunk?
I bought the toy version.
And the Shell station.
Yes, yeah, the Shell station. Okay, the Permacasa stimulus package is up after this. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.